This is live from my office. Welcome once again to, as I've told you many times, the highest rated podcast in this office. We take this time to play you some highlights from the radio show. Radio is that thing in your car that makes noise, where you could stream the Steve Cochran Show or actually listen to it on the radio as God meant it to be. And the radio show itself is on every morning between 5:30 and 9 on the Big 890 WLS in Chicago, wherever you live. Stream it on any platform you like. Listen to it on your smart devices. And of course, when it comes to Live From My Office, your support, your love, your rate and review, your subscribe, it's always appreciated. Wherever you get your podcast, subscribe, rate and review to Live From My Office. So let's get on with a couple of highlights here. What you're going to hear is some troubling things going on in the world from the show just in the past few days. The really amazing young woman, Halia Dudula, is from Ukraine. She's been on the show many times. She's here to help Ukrainian refugees, children in particular, try to become comfortable, as comfortable as they can, while she worries about her own family back in Ukraine, and tells us a little bit about when she may be able to go home. And Michael O'Hanlon is also with us to talk about the continued threat of that lunatic Vladimir Putin, not just to the people of Ukraine, but to the entire free world. Then we'll take a cleansing breath, and I'll bring in someone I haven't talked to in a long time. His name is Lars Dingman, and Lars is psychic. Or so he claims. Let's find out together. It's a little of this, little of that. It's highlights from the WLS radio show. It's Live From My Office. And thank you for listening to it. Remember, subscribe, rate, and review to Live From My Office wherever you are, whenever you can. Our friend Halia Dudula is here. We met Halia through Pat Brady and Pat's daughter, Maeve Brady. Yeah. And Halia, how do I describe your job? Teacher? Is that right?
More social worker, I think, than, like, nice. Assistant.
Yeah.
Coacher. Academic coacher. Yeah.
For what group? What school? What organization?
It's Ukrainian school in Ukrainian village.
Okay.
I work with the refugees.
And you are from where?
From Ukraine.
What part of Ukraine?
Western Ukraine. Lviv.
Because we've come to get like an amateur knowledge of Ukraine through the coverage of this horrible war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As it goes on. Towns we didn't know or, you know, for a long time everybody said Kiev. Right.
Yeah, that's great Kiev. That you know that it is Kiev.
Yes,
yeah,
so we've learned a lot. Anyway, it's a pleasure to see you again. And your friend Saba from Iran is welcome here anytime. Something came up this morning, we couldn't pull that off. But I want to talk to you about you. So tell me about your experience now in Chicago, what your job is day-to-day, and what you're experiencing with the kids you deal with.
So it was 1 month of break. Not 1 month, just 2 weeks of break.
Yeah.
But it was so intensive 2 weeks that I don't remember what was before.
Sure, I get it.
Yeah, so with school, it's all the same almost, but children become much more better after the first time I saw them. I just make the report on every child, and I recognize that actually they are really doing better, and they started to speak English much better. And
it's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think for children who have parents here, both parents, mm-hmm. it's fine to change. Like, they are not thinking that much about war right now as it was before. Mm-hmm. I have just out of 16 children, maybe 2 who still like talk about war every day and who like paint the tanks and like died people. All others, they are even like started to use different colors for paintings. They are doing better.
Well, that's got to make you feel very good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, let's back that up too, because do I remember this correctly? You worked with Russian orphans before you came here, right?
With Russian orphans?
Was it Russian orphans or Ukrainian orphans?
No, Ukrainian orphans.
Ukrainian orphans. Yeah. There's a stark difference.
Yeah,
there really is.
Yeah.
What got you interested in social work? Just working with kids who really needed the help?
I am from the big family. I have four siblings and 1 adopted brother.
Okay.
So when we adopted him, I recognized that there are children who don't have parents while I'm so happy with my family.
Sure.
So after that, I started to volunteer in orphanage twice a year. And then when the COVID started, I just moved to Levin village and I lived with orphans, and that changed my life. It was even worse than during the war. It was like the situation, the conditions, and everything was different. So it's the first time I lived between children who don't have parents at all mm-hmm. and who still live in the orphanage. This is about like bad system of childcare.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, but this is thing I want to change in Ukraine. That's why I came here for education.
So you were how old when you were working with the orphans?
21 or 20. 21, 22.
Yeah, and I know you don't think this is a big deal, but I tell people your story all the time because I think you're a very special person with an amazing heart for what you do. And, you know, I'll give your dad and your family credit for that as well.
He will listen.
Yeah, because you obviously had a lot of love in your house so that you could see that others need that as well. So just one last piece of your background in history. I think I understand this right. The social work you're learning here, you hope to bring back home because there's not as much of a social work network there now. Is that right?
Actually, the situation changed. The news, I want to say. I'm going back home earlier.
Oh, you are?
I think I will not finish education here. It's because it's very different here. The system here, it's very, very different from the Ukrainian situation. And the challenges which you have in U.S., it's very different than the challenges we have in Ukraine. Like, even the case that we have the orphanages and you don't have it here at all. For me, but I think it's not the main reason. Because if there wouldn't be war, I would finish. I would just feel fine here. But I feel like I can't concentrate on education. I am always stressed. Even though I do hear a lot and I'm trying to feel better, but because my family's in Ukraine and I feel every day I just want to talk with them, call to them.
Sure.
And because I'm very like family person, I think I will be more useful in Ukraine. Right
and
now.
Do you feel an urgency to go back based on what you just described?
It's not emergency. I think it's not that I will be much more useful in Ukraine. I can be very useful here. I can like talk about Ukraine.
Right.
I can do I can unite.
But you want to do the work there.
I just want to, I feel this is the time in Ukraine for change and there are so many orphans right now and maybe I will learn by doing in Ukraine more than learn here by theory. I'm not a theory person. I just hate just studying without any practice. And here I don't really have the practice with foster families or something. I just have with refugees, which is not, it's interesting, but it's not my topic of my passion.
I love how driven you are. You're an amazing person, Andrea.
Will you be safe when you go back to Ukraine? Because we see here in America, in Chicago, we're seeing images, you know, of war-torn portions of Ukraine. I know that's mostly
we're not
in
seeing
the
happy
portion.
Stories. The news isn't the happy
so
stuff,
will
right?
Will you be safe when you go back?
No, I won't. Of course I will not, because it's war. And it's like every time it's different cities. Like my sister, do you remember the story about Dnipro?
Tell that again.
So it was the Russian rocket reached the house of 9 levels building.
Yep.
And it just destroyed the whole house. And more than 50 people were killed. And so many injured. And so many people just saw it. And it's like very stressful. It's in the city center of the big city. And my sister was there just one day before.
Ugh.
And actually, I don't know, my family, we just, I don't know, God save us sometimes, I feel that. Because my father also was in this city day before the rocket reached the same place where they had to have he is the journalist. And, so it's like there's no place in Ukraine is safe. But I feel, I don't know, after I lived during the war 6 months in Ukraine, and mm-hmm. I remember like every time we go to the bombshell, every time, like I was meeting the foster families, invite them to the Poland,
mm-hmm.
and I remember how hard it was for me to be in Poland while reading the news from Ukraine. And here I thought that like during the time I will feel more relief. I do feel better, but still, like reading the news and knowing that I'm not there, it just makes me. I think that this time it's not the best time for education,
mm-hmm.
but I think for Ukraine it's great that people going abroad and get education and then they will come back.
I think it's a wonderful thing now. Mm-hmm. And what you say makes total sense, because I would just tell people who are listening now, imagine if you were living in Europe and studying and America was under attack. You would want to be here with your family in all likelihood, and you'd be driven to do the same. But you have a special level of drive. I keep complimenting you for a reason, young lady, because you're doing amazing work, and it's super important. Andrea?
Yeah, I just want to say to you or ask you, people back here, especially the younger kids, school groups, want to help. What is the best way that they can help right now?
How children can help.
How children, like do fundraisers. You know, my goddaughter's a Girl Scout, and she said, we want to do something for the people of Ukraine? What can we do?
Yeah, I think fundraising is like the most even easier thing you can do, because it's like you can do with American people, like not even involved with the Ukrainians. But actually, like also one thing I want to talk here, I was studying in one of the best universities in Ukraine, mm-hmm. and our professors are very open to us, and we have like still, I finished 2 years ago, but we still have communications. And I talked with one of my professors that like, what can I do here as a person who studied in the university and I'm educated and I can do like more educational stuff here? And he said, like, you should like provide more education about Ukraine, because like for many years, Russia did their propaganda everywhere.
Right.
So people like, because you know the Kiev, for example, or you know a lot about Russians. And when I travel in Europe, like a lot, people were always like, oh, Ukraine is part of Russia. And it was always, it was for me so painful, because I was always against Russia. Before this war, before I was born, I think I was against Russia. Because like all my family struggled because of the Soviet Union and all this stuff.
So you could see the hurt that we're seeing now. You saw it years ago.
Right.
Yeah. Like my grandma, she lost her mother and father. She lost her brother in the camp, concentration camp. So like we lived in the famine. We lost our like part of family. And like I know this through ages and everyone know that, but our history also was like banned by Russia during the Soviet Union. Yeah. So our books written like how Moscow is cool, and it's the same. I was a few days ago, I was so struggling with one professor who is in the Chicago University. His mm-hmm. name is John. I even signed his name out. I don't know. I said that I will die while listening to his lecture. John Marsheimer.
Okay. And his lecture was?
His lecture, he's just the example. Like, I think like you asked me how you can help us. Yeah. I think just listen to more. But actually, he's a very famous professor, and he was talking about Ukraine through the side of Russia, how they want to world see us. And he's a professor in University of Chicago. It's like one of the coolest university here.
Sure.
So, and his main facts were that our revolution in 2014 was the revolution of fascists. Like, while my brother was almost killed there, and like for 2 days we saw that
he was killed. No wonder you wanted to go and find him.
And yeah, I will. I mean, I like what we want to do, and that was my last months because I didn't have education like the university, so I was more free. I went to gather Ukrainian students here, and so we can do more about education in the universities and to read out those propaganda which Russia just. I just read a lot of articles about how Russia put a lot of like money into the education of international professors. They are coming to Russia and they take those facts and arguments Russia wants to, like, people know about them.
Oh yeah, the Russian view, the Kremlin view, the Putin view being put out like it's factual and newsworthy when it's propaganda. Alia Dedula is here, and I always get self-conscious about pronouncing your name. That is right though, isn't it?
Yes. You're doing better.
I'm doing better.
See, there you go, Steve.
Tell us about your family. Your dad's a journalist.
Yes.
And he works on covering all news, or is it specific to the war now?
No, he's journalist for maybe Ukrainian Catholic University, and they have their blog. And I think his good skill is that he's making very interesting stories about like very specific people who survived and who have the resilience, and they, like, even though they suffered a lot and they don't have house or something right now, but they opened their new foundation, or they just still doing fine. And he has maybe 100 stories of those people.
Wow. Good human feature stories.
Yeah. I can share with you. He said, like, Halya, if you have some context, I just want to share, because this is amazing stories. And I think he's one of the most happiest in our family, because like I was dealing with orphans and I saw a lot of pain, and he is dealing with like people who deal with a lot of pain, but still they are like, he always coming after his job, like motivated. Like, I talk with this kind of like person, and she or he is so cool. I'm jealous.
He sounds like an amazing man.
Yeah. And a great journalist too.
It's my father. Yeah. He's so cool.
And you have how many brothers?
Two
brothers.
Mm-hmm. And two sisters.
And two sisters. And they are all in Ukraine.
Yeah. Actually, my younger sister, she's getting married with her fiance, and he's soldier. So I have to go home in 1 month, and I ask her, like, please send me at least like 1 week when the wedding will be, and she's like, Hale, she's his soldier. When he will like be allowed to go back, we will get married. So we never know when it will happen. Oh. And it's my the biggest fear, because if that will be, he can come for 2 days sometimes, and they should like manage this. And I will not be able to come in 2 days.
We just need to get you a plane ticket, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, sometimes I have just nightmares that I will not be able to manage this, because I have to fly to Poland and then I have to stay in the queue in the border. It's like sometimes it's like 1 day just to
well, your
it's
friend,
a process.
Your
yeah.
friend Maeve Brady and Mr. Brady, Pat Brady, who you've got to know well.
Yeah.
Pat's very wealthy. So here's what I want you to remember to say. Pat, will you fly me home to Ukraine?
No, I don't want to take... I have my savings. It's fine.
Yeah, no, we're going to make Pat Brady pay.
100%. 100% he will.
There's a charitable organization and an association we'd like you to pay attention to. HelpHeroesOfUkraine.com is a good place to donate when you can. And also?
The Ukrainian Women's Association of America. Their Facebook is UWAA, and they help children.
Yes. And
that's
are both,
what you're talking about.
Both organizations that you feel strongly about. We've only got a couple of minutes left for this visit, but we keep asking you to come back. And while I'm sad that you'll be leaving at some point, I know you need to go home, and I think it's a wonderful thing. But you need to come back before you leave. And I'll call Pat Brady for you and get the money.
Please, it's better him to donate to Army, not to me.
We'll see. But in the meantime, in this last minute and a half, 2 minutes or so, what is it you want to say to folks, if anything, that you haven't said so far?
To folks? I don't know. I feel that, like, because here should be the Saba, this Iranian woman, and I was preparing for this speech, and I just wanted to say that what I feel here, that being here is like always feeling the responsibility for my country, which is far away from me. But I still like I can't even like feel relief here, because I have to do always something for my country. And maybe this is like something we both talk a lot, that their country, they also have this regime. And we had many years ago, and this other revolution.
This is Saba, the young woman from Iran, who is invited to come whenever she can make it.
Yeah, maybe she will manage later.
Yeah.
And I just so inspired by Iranian women and people, because, you know, they have so many people killed in this revolution.
Right.
And
yeah,
we
right.
and we have our people in Ukraine. But we still have this power for freedom we choose. And I just want to, if Russian people listen to me, I don't know, I hope that maybe you can also organize here and do something, because your silence is actually killing all of us, because you also like Russian country and also people. I feel that every person is responsible for their government, who they choose, that everyone should say something, like they are against, or they are
stand up against mistreatment of anybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but not just say on the Facebook or
just
right. go out and do more. I feel that this is the responsibility, and we do a lot, and Iranian people do here a lot, and like a lot of people trying to make their countries more strong. And this is for the safe of all world, because if Russia will win the war, it's impossible. Yeah. But let's do this. I know with the nuclear weapon, this is the threat for U.S., that's, for every country.
And that's what all this military support is for.
You're very inspiring.
You are very inspiring.
And I always want to say thank you at the end for you. It's really
nice.
Big help, and everyone is so happy that I am here in like between the people who support Ukraine, because it's like hard to be in China, for example, for Ukrainians or somewhere.
Sure.
But thank you.
And I hope we get you samples of your interview links that you can send back to your family. If we don't, let us know.
They can hear you.
And we'll fire Tom.
Maeve always will have to send me a link.
So yeah. Anyway, God bless you. Stay healthy, and let us know what your plans are.
Thank you, Holly.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
All the best. Michael O'Hanlon, Brookings Institute, an expert we turn to often to help us understand what's going on in Ukraine and when it could all end. The rest of the world, Michael, is often caught up in symbolism when it comes to important dates. We're coming up on a year. Is that going to be a mark in time, or is it more important when the winter passes and a new fighting season begins?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. Because I don't think, as much as we might love to see this thing wind down now that it's been a year, and of course we all would have loved it not to happen in the first place, I don't see either side in the fight actually thinking in 365-day terms. And like you said, they're thinking more about getting ready for potential offensives once the mud dries up. So right now, it's interesting. It doesn't snow a huge amount in Ukraine. I've been checking these statistics. And, you know, I grew up in Western New York State. You folks live in the windy and snowy city. And I think people along the Great Lakes of the United States or the Northeast tend to get more snow than Ukraine, even though it's further north. And we think of it with that Russian steppe. But so sometimes you can actually maneuver okay in the winter, especially tanks and tracked vehicles, not so much off-road with wheeled vehicles. But when you get into the spring, it's too muddy to maneuver off-road. Mm. So you got to wait typically. It depends obviously on the year and the location, but probably till late April, May. Yeah, just like we know in Chicago or Buffalo, St. Patrick's Day is not really spring. It's not there either. And so anyway, I think that we should expect that as we get into May, June, July, we'll see if anybody has sort of a master plan for the year that really is going to give them the chance of a substantial breakthrough.
I think you're right on all counts. The thing that I think is going to be very tough for the Ukrainian people, and it'll be tough for us, obviously. God forbid it should happen here. Tough for people anywhere. It's like, why should we give up any land? That's been the constant cry. We're not giving up an inch. We're going to get it all back, all of those things. We saw what happened in Crimea. For this to come to an end, that probably is the eventuality. But the people of Ukraine coming to accept that this unjust war started, that lives were lost, and now they're also going to have to give up territory to end it is going to be difficult.
Yes, but I think that the way around it, it's not going to make anybody thrilled, but it's not to necessarily say this is permanent, but to say, just like the Baltic states were taken by the Soviet Union in the Cold War, and we never recognized that. And once the Cold War ended and the Soviet Union fell apart, they were the first to go. They were free and now they're independent. That may have to be sort of the game plan, or you may have to say for something like, I don't know, maybe for Crimea, that you essentially have shared sovereignty and anybody's passport who's Ukrainian or Russian can go there. And, you know, these are the kind of ideas that have sometimes been discussed with the Palestinians and the Israelis as well. Some of this kind of precedent was attempted in Bosnia at the end of that civil war. There's a place in Bosnia called the Brichko Corridor where there's a local autonomous government. It's supervised and sort of overseen by Serbs, Croats, and Muslims all together because they all want that land. But the only compromise they come up with is, you know, let's basically let it administer itself. And we'll all continue to claim that we really own it. But in the meantime, life goes on. So those are the kinds of things you can start to play. You could also imagine a referendum. You have to think hard about who gets to vote because so many populations have moved and shifted. But you could imagine a referendum in some part of the country, like the eastern region, the Donbass, maybe not until after Putin's gone from power. You know, so these are the kinds of things that may allow you to sort of soften the whole issue of territory into something besides a polar yes, no kind of choice.
Last couple of minutes here, Jane.
It sounds good, but I don't think Putin's going to want to share anything. And it also sounds like it's not petering out. It's ramping up, especially with Putin threatening nuclear attack. The people closest to Putin, people in his circle who don't agree with him, Michael, what can they do? And are they even going to say anything? Hey, I don't agree with it. I'd like to end this thing.
Well, first of all, I think you're right that right now nobody's in a mood to compromise, Russians or Ukrainians. But second, as you introduce this point about other concerns, other power brokers in Russia, you know, that's where a few months down the road, once each side has given it, you know, its best shot at taking more land and probably mostly failed, we probably still see some kind of a stalemate. At that point, you could start to see these sorts of, you know, creative, flexible, nuanced ideas start to have some appeal. And especially if we can also figure out a way to help enhance Ukraine's security without it bringing it into NATO, because Ukraine wants to be in NATO. Russia doesn't want it to be in NATO, of course. Mm-hmm. We want Ukraine to have some protection. I think the way to do it is with an expanded long-term military training mission that includes U.S. troops that would not be subject to Russian veto and that would be supervised perhaps by a new kind of organization that someday in the future, Russia also could aspire to join. But in the near term, of course, it would not. And so that way you keep American forces on Ukrainian soil as a deterrent without having to make this a NATO issue, because that really makes Russia see red. That's the other big kind of question that's out there.
What do you do for fun, Michael, when you just want to kick back? You sports guy? What do you do for fun? What do you do for laughs?
Yeah, I'd say a fair amount of sports. And I think, you know, if you're from Chicago or Baltimore or Washington these days, you try to laugh, not cry when you watch the NFL. Anyway, no, it's good. We're having a mild winter, getting outside a lot. So,
you're in Washington?
Yeah, Bethesda, Maryland.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. And are you from Buffalo?
Yeah, about an hour east. So we don't get nearly the snow. But, you know, we do feel the pain when the Bills lose. Yeah.
Michael and I bonded over our central New York upbringing.
That's nice. Yeah, I married the Mafia, Michael. My husband's family's in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Oh,
she's been in Buffalo more than she's been in Chicago.
I have.
Michael, thank you. My best to your family. It's always great to have
Thanks,
you.
Michael.
Thank you for doing this.
Likewise, my friend.
There you go. That's Michael.
See you, my friends.
Hamlin.
Yep. Thanks, both of you.
Thank you. And Michael Hamlin at the Brookings Institute.
News team, assemble!
Can a unicorn toy that poops sparkling slime also function as a form of cultural criticism? Ah, these are the questions that will sooner or later be submitted to a federal judge in the Southern District of New York. It seems that BMG Rights Management has filed a lawsuit against the manufacturer of the Poopsie Slime Surprise collectible toy.
Oh my.
Check it out. Poopsie Slime Surprise is a brand of slime pooping unicorn. A brand of, you know, that wide category of slime pooping unicorn.
Actually, I'm interested. Keep telling more.
Well, it currently retails for $100 to $300 on Amazon. It's a heart-shaped belly button. When you press it, it poops. The manufacturer also produced an animated video where the unicorns dance to this song. The lawyer alleges that my poops infringes on my humps.
No.
I thought it could be.
It's totally different.
All right, think about this. You go through law school, right? You've paid all the money. Yes. You've passed the bar. And you have to stand in front of a judge in the greatest judicial system on the planet and go, Your Honor, it is clear that my poops is the exact same song as my humps. And we need to determine legally, once and for all, the questions that's plagued America for so long. What exactly are my humps?
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not. It
gets the people going.
Item number two.
It's the people going both ways.
The Swedish government has done something surprising this morning. They're moving to get rid of permits needed for dancing. They're saying you should just be able to dance without a permit or a license. Swedish coalition government wants to cut the red tape when it comes to dancing by abolishing a decades-old requirement for restaurants, nightclubs, and other places. You got to get a permit if you want to dance. Hold on a second, I got a gag reflex kicking in.
Wait a minute. Why do you have to get a permit in the first place?
Well, you know, in Sweden, we do things a little different there.
So you just want
exactly right.
to break out dancing, like you and John and Nick had
no,
your
No, we don't
dance?
Want to see that kind of...
You couldn't do it.
Even if you'd like to shake your money maker, you're not welcome here.
That's all right. I'm moving.
Should I go talk to the town council?
You should. Yeah. You'd be a great spokesman for this.
Footloose.
The justice minister, one Gunnar Stromer. Gunnar Stromer.
Wonder if Gunnar dances.
Said it's not responsible for the state to regulate people's dance. Yeah, you know what? Why don't you tell that to the dad at Footloose?
Our Lord wasn't testing us. How would you account for the proliferation these days of this obscene rock and roll music?
And finally, a follow-up story, if you will. Rhode Island officials have released the results of the Santa Cookie DNA test you've all been wondering about.
Oh, yeah. I was vowing this.
The Rhode Island Department of Health says it was not able to definitively confirm or refute the presence of Santa in a young girl's home after she requested to have the partially eaten cookie and a couple of gnawed-on-carrot sticks tested for DNA to see if there was Santa Claus and reindeer tracks on either one of them. The department said it found no complete matches to anyone in the combined DNA index system. We know why? Because Santa's not in the DNA system.
Exactly.
Santa's in your heart. And also at the North Pole.
Yeah, Santa's at the North Pole.
I don't think he's ever committed a crime, so, you know, other than breaking and entering.
Yeah, and by the
way, not a crime when it comes to Santa.
Hundred thousand.
And by the way, not now he's not at the North Pole. he is in Galapagos. He takes a whole month of January.
That's right.
And he gets a tan.
Kicks back.
That explains why I got a turtle this year. I knew it.
Actually, this just handed me. Good news is the lab did find the presence of DNA closely matching Rangifer tarandus. It's also known as reindeer. When testing those carrots. The carrots showed, I don't want to get people too excited. The carrot showed traces of reindeer.
Makes sense.
That's all we need to know.
Yeah. So that's what I want to tell you, because I was in a band called Traces of Reindeer.
Oh, good for you.
Oh, so painful. So painful.
That's going to do it for all of us here at Channel 4 News. I'm Ron Burgundy.
That was one of my favorite news of the world. I felt like we really brought important information up. All right, well, this is kind of a special treat here on the program because we rarely get to talk to what I would classify as a surprise guest, but this is a surprise. Welcome to the show, sir.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Everything's fine here, and wherever people are listening.
I knew that.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
You have a special skill, and it's a skill we could probably use now because people just don't know which way is up. Could I best qualify you as a psychic?
Yes, because that's. Am I not supposed to say who I am? Are we playing some kind of stupid joke this morning?
Well, don't
is someone going to win some bagels from the Chicago Bagel Authority?
Now, don't get sensitive on me. I'm just trying to build the excitement. So you
All right.
You are a psychic. You have do these thoughts, these statements I'm about to hear. Do they come to you in visions, or are they facts to you? How do you see the future?
Yeah, first of all, the Huffington Post calls me America's funniest psychic, so take that with a grain of liberal salt, but I find them very perceptive.
Sure.
What I do is I ask people to give me typically the last three songs that they randomly heard, and from those song titles, I'm able to divine their past, present, and future, and it comes to me in like visions, movies, sound bites, feelings, ideas. I see things, and then I do my best to translate what I'm seeing to make it useful for the subject.
This
is the best way to describe it.
This gift can sometimes be a burden. Has it been a good thing in your life, or has it been troubling?
Yeah, it's been predominantly a good thing, although sometimes, you know, you meet someone, and you know they're going to be dead in 36 hours. It makes for an uncomfortable dinner. But, you know, the universe is the universe, and sure. We all live lives over and over and over again. So, you know, you crap the bed in this life, maybe you'll do better in the next one.
What a T-shirt that would be. All right, so let's go back to 2022.
Yes.
I have a couple of predictions here, and I'd just like you to comment on these. What is it you tried to tell us about Congress last year?
Well, if you remember, you asked me, we do this every year in January, and I predict what's forthcoming in the upcoming year. You asked me what I saw in Congress, and all I saw was, do you remember the movie The Great Race?
Yeah, I do, actually, yeah.
There's a classic pie fight in that film between Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis, and it's thousands of pies.
Yeah.
And when you asked me about, all I saw was, just like a clown show. It was pies and pies and people getting pied in the face and falling down. And you said Congress. I said Great Race. And I think you
right.
thought that I was referring to the election, which was a foregone conclusion. Obviously, the Republicans did not do very well for a variety of reasons. But I was seeing past that into what has been transpiring over the last month. It's a clown show, a giant pie fight, basically, where no one wins.
And would the newly elected speaker, would he have been the lead clown in that clown show?
You know what? He's not even good enough to be the lead clown. He's the guy that comes in after the pie fight, and he's sweeping up the floor, muttering, going, true. Oh, God, I got to work till midnight, and then I have to go work at, you know, Chipotle.
Yeah.
It's going to be a crazy year coming up in Congress. Even I don't know what's worse than a clown show, but it's going to be that.
It's interesting though that you bring up Congress, because when I think of the last three songs being the trigger that sent you the visions, You know, this is the oldest Congress in history, and the Democrats in the Senate have never been older. And for instance, Dianne Feinstein from California, I believe she's 204. So if
she signed the Declaration of Independence, I don't know if she was the only woman to sign the Declaration of Independence. Yeah.
And then normally we wouldn't go this specific, I suppose, but you made a very, and it was almost on the eve of the event, but you made a very important prediction about last year's Oscars.
Yes, I believe my direct quote when you asked me, will anything happen at the Oscars? I said, someone will spike the punch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't think you don't need to be a genius to read into that.
No, spike the punch, slap the host, very similar.
Yeah. Yeah, punch, slap. Some people say it was a punch. Some people say it was a slap. It was the heard round the world. If you were watching the Oscars, if you were not, then you didn't.
Yeah, there's no question about it. All right, now how do we get the future from you now? Would you do a specific reading of me? How would this work?
So I think if you tell me the last three songs that you randomly heard, that's the key, randomly, not that you played or were told to play by your corporate overlords at the station, songs that you listen to in your personal life, I will give you a reading, and that perhaps will generalize to the fine people of the city of Chicago.
So take care of business, bop, and the wheels on the bus.
Yes. All right. So take and typically the way these work, the way the titles work, the first song is about your past. The second song is about your present. The third song is about your future. So the first song about your past is Taking Care of Business. I believe before you were on the current station that you were on, you were on a different station in Chicago. Who really gave you the business? It treated you unfairly. You were shafted without the aid of a lubricant or even a goodbye basket of muffins. Nothing. So that's in the past. Good for you that you're out of that other
yes,
place. That's your past.
And again, that's 89 WLS. All right. What about my present?
You bop. You bop. I think you're going to diversify your business interests, and you're going to start a restaurant chain in the Midwest this year. You know what? You're dreaming big.
Well, no, listen, it's not been done before. That's a category opener for sure. And what about the future?
Sure,
you say the future is tied to the wheels on the bus song.
Yes, Steve. What do buses do? They bring children to knowledge. They transport empty chalkboard, open book minds to a place where then they are then filled with knowledge and then sent back to their homes. And really, that's what you do every day on the radio. You take the mouth-breathing, empty-minded populace of the city. You fill them with knowledge and humor and insight and traffic on the 9th, and then they go back to their lives.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So you are the wheels on the bus. You're the bus.
The people's bus. Right. Lars, thank you very much for being on. It's been quite a treat, and I will take your visions for my own past, present, and future and learn from them.
Yes, Steve, thanks for having me on, and I will talk to you next January, I suppose, and we will review the accuracy of these predictions.
I'm sure they'll be right on if we don't even talk before then. It's Lars Dingman, Making America Better, one song at a time. Bless him and all the fine work he's doing. That's it. That simple, that easy. Don't forget, brand new shows drop on Mondays for Live From My Office. New conversations with people all the time. Coming soon, a priest and a rabbi walk into a podcast with Father Tom Hurley and a friend. We're going to talk about spirituality and the crisis of faith that's going on all over the world. That's coming soon. But join us every Monday for a brand new episode of Live From My Office. And midweek, at some point midweek, end week, we're going to get you these WLS highlights like we did today. Courtesy of Miranda Ellis, producing, filling in for Ross Cochran, who, had something better to do, I guess. Whatever. But thank you, Miranda, for stepping up and getting that done. And thank you, as always, for listening to Live From My Office.